going to open a public testimony on House Bill 3408. And as we do that, if I could provide some guidance for everyone, this has been kind of a confusing bill in some respects, because all of a sudden we have lots of attachments being discussed. Now, if I could make something very clear to everyone, okay, so members of our committee understand too, I think I've been kind of chatting with each one of them. Today, I know there are some amendments that are being reworked, but if I could remind all of those testifying, be sure that you lay out for us today, even though you might not have the written amendment in front of you, lay out what you plan to bring, because we will have a work session probably tomorrow. But the thing I want to make clear for everyone is I want no surprises for the committee tomorrow. Okay, so we should leave here today with a pretty good feeling of if you have an amendment and you're working on that amendment, we know what it is, and all of the audience will know. The reason I'm doing that is so everyone will know what's on board. I don't want a surprise amendment walking in tomorrow afternoon when we'll probably meet, I think, about 1 o'clock tomorrow. But we'll reconfirm that. But right now, I'm going to go ahead with the public hearing. Committee members, do you have anything you want to add to my statement or disagree with me at any point on it? Senator Mesley, you're okay? Okay. All right. We have a... Yes. Oh, yes. Sadkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure that all the members have... We distributed a packet that was only about an hour ago, so I want to be sure that you have the...
Green amendment. Still there.
Yes.
The green amendment.
Mr. Chair, I do have one question. In that packet, we did not have the 17s. Is that right?
In the 17s, yes. They're just today. I mean
the 16.
I don't know. We don't have
16s, as I understand it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Betsy. The 16s that you have in your packet, or the 16 I have right here with me, are being revised. So you do not have a 16 in front of you, and they will discuss the elements of 16. Okay. Why don't we, just to get things on the record, I'm going to ask the Ms. Atkins, if she would just brief us on the major bill, because there's so many things that are being added and discussed that I don't want to lose the focus of what we were trying to do with the bill, okay?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. The original House Bill 3408 allows creation of regional transportation authorities and regional transportation authority districts through intergovernmental agreements. The powers and duties of the regional transportation authorities, and I think they're being called RTAs, are specified in the bill. It does require that any revenue-raising measures from these intergovernment agreements and RTAs be proposed through voter-approved measures. And it also requires that the regional authority boards have Department of Transportation approval for measures that improve state-owned facilities. You have the A15 amendments, and in your packet, they've been hand-engrossed into the bill to make it a little easier to see where the changes lie. They define additional terms. That's on the first page of the hand-engrossed amendments. Yes.
Okay.
They also specify a process for dissolving an authority. They clarify who can be signatories to the intergovernment agreements. They clarify that the vote requirement is relative to revenue bonds, is for when a tax is imposed, not for issuing of the bonds. They also clarify what approvals and agreements must be in place prior to asking for voter approval, and a different list of things that must be in place prior to disbursement of funds. So again, that's the original bill and the Dash 15 amendments. It's my understanding that there are additional amendments after the bond council looked at the 3408-15s, and those are currently in legislative council, and the proponents of the bill can speak to those additional changes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. For Senator Carter's information, if I could just add, what I told people today, some amendments are at LC right now, some are being revised and so forth, but I'm asking everyone today, if you have amendments and you're working on them, when they come up here today, We want all of those things on the table today. We want no surprises tomorrow. And so, because I want this committee to, and not only the committee, but all the players to understand the amendments so they can support them or fight them or whatever they want to do. But I don't want any surprises on it. Okay, thank you very much. And that's just,
did you guys hear that? No.
They heard it. I went through it twice now. Okay, I want to start with, except I'll ask members of the legislature, if any of you are in committees and you need to get away right quick, like anyone in her, what I'd like to do is to just deal with the bill that we have before us and then deal with the any additional amendments that are not in this. Is that all right? Okay. But if anyone all of a sudden you get a notice you have to go to another meeting or something, let me know and we'll get you on, okay? All right. Doug Tinsdale from the ODOT. Well, let me just start. This is originally your bill, right?
That's correct.
Yes, so it'd probably be appropriate, even though you're going to talk about an amendment later, but this is to the bill itself. Go ahead and stay there, Doug. It's all right.
Thank you. For the record, Bruce Starr, State Representative, House District 3 in Washington County. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm only going to be extremely brief because
this committee accepts that.
Because I'm sure you have a list of folks that can talk more depth about the RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority. What excited me about this issue was the ability that we would give local governments to deal with local transportation issues, problems locally. Identify a problem, identify a way to raise money locally to deal with the problem, go to the voters and say, here's our idea, what do you think? I mean, in a nutshell, that's it. Local transportation problem, funding solution, go to the voters and say, here's the universe, what do you think? That's very overly simplistic because you look at the amendments and they're extremely complicated and complex. And I have not been involved in the day-to-day negotiations and communications regarding the amendments. I'll let the others talk about that. But when this issue came across the House floor, first it came out of my committee in a unanimous vote. When it came across the House floor, that concept generated a 55-1 vote. Again, it's complex and complicated. And what you have also in this bill is a broad relating clause. And because of that broad relating clause, there's an opportunity to tack other things onto this bill. Short of that, my request to you is to let's not lose sight of the important issue that we're trying to accomplish here, to deal with transportation situations on a local level, provide an innovative and creative way for locals to deal with those transportation situations and problems. Let's not lose sight of that. That's the core of this bill. That's the important part of this bill. Other things that will be proposed to add on to that will be important as well. Some of them are very non-controversial, and I've talked to all of you about the school bus one. Mm-hmm. As soon as I get up from here, I'm going to leave and trust that issue will take care of itself. But the core issue here is fundamental and important, and I believe that needs to move through this process, and I think it can in a strong bipartisan effort. As far as the other amendments that will be proposed, those will be judgment calls for this committee to make as far as whether or not you're willing to cast that aye vote, whether or not your colleagues on that Senate floor will be willing to cast that aye vote, and whether or not the governor ultimately will sign a bill. So with that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But the details, it's a complicated, detailed amendment, and really what they've worked on since it came across is just fine-tuning the whole thing. There's not wholesale changes from my perspective. Others may disagree. There's not wholesale changes, more fine-tuning, definitional, kind of tweaking around the edges kinds of things. I'll let them explain that. But again, just to reiterate, the core principle, the idea of local problem, local solution, go to the voters and get their permission, I think it's the core of the issue. So,
Representative Starr, two things. Have you seen the hand engrossed
I have not.
Okay, well,
I've had a copy of the A5 amendment, or A15 amendments, I think that's what you're,
yes,
you're talking about. From my perspective, the A15s are good amendments. I understand that there's another additional tweak.
Okay, so you do understand, okay. The other thing that surprised me, you said there were 56 people over in the House, huh?
It was a 50.
Surprised me, I was over there. I was just there yesterday and I didn't notice that. Okay, appreciate you being with us, okay? All right. Okay.
Thank you.
You bet. Come back anytime. Doug.
Chair Duncan.
By the way, Bernie bothered me. Why don't you come on up at the same time?
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, I'm Doug Tindall, Oregon Department of Transportation. As a number of Representative Starr's ideas this year, I think that the concept, as he explained it, is a good concept. I can't see anything unsound with having local entities working to solve local problems, and we think that that's a good way to go. I've worked a lot with Bernie and Dennis Mulvihill, and greatly appreciate the time that they spend as we've talked about this. And I think that Representative Starr alluded to the only concerns that we have, and a lot of our concerns have been addressed. The only thing that sort of slapped me in the face was when we had the A-15s, and we thought we were there. We thought we had agreement on the bill. One more person looked at it, and the changes were not not hugely consequential, although I haven't had time to digest all of that yet and haven't seen the amendment, but certainly were numerous. And what made me concerned at that point was, this is really sort of a big thing that we're doing here, and I wonder if it's been completely vetted. And I can't bring you anything specifically that in terms of a concern, but it just made me wonder when I saw the number of changes that came back from one more person looking at it, when not a lot of people have had time to see it. We look forward to seeing the amendments tomorrow. I appreciate what's been done. I appreciate the concept. I appreciate all the work that's been done on this bill. Just wanted to make you aware that it is detailed and it is complex, as Representative Starr suggested.
Question: you're comfortable with the Hinton and Gross version, right? With the A-15s?
A-15.
That's the one you still have a concern.
No. We got on the A-15s. We had looked at it and we said, yeah, we think we can live with this.
Right.
And
questions for
Doug at all?
Okay, Bernie.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Bernie Bottomley from TriMet. We've been working, and maybe Bill and the ALC and LLC would like to come on up.
You bet.
We've been working with cities, counties, port districts, and other interest groups on this legislation, and just apologize to the committee. We took the A-15s and we made the mistake of showing those to Harvey Rogers, who is our bond counsel and the bond counsel for DAS, and he wanted to conform the language in here to sort of the way that the bond counsel language in the statute is currently written. So, that, as a couple of people have mentioned, there are changes that are down at LC. They basically changed the language to conform with the existing bonding language in statute. It makes it easier to sell securities and so forth. But it largely does not change any of the pertinent limitations in the bill. Let me just briefly tell you what we're trying to do. Representative Starr mentioned we're trying to enable regions to form intergovernmental entities that can pursue funding for transportation projects. And the model for this is the correctional facilities intergovernmental agreements that are currently in the 190 statutes that have been used in Eastern Oregon. This is a little bit more complicated because there are more players in the transportation field: ports, transit districts, transportation districts, road authorities, cities and counties, and ODOT. But that's the basic framework that we're trying to follow. Let me just tell you a little bit about some of the things that we can't do with this authority, or the hoops that we have to go through if we're to form an authority. One is that we have to get the agreement of the jurisdictions that would be in the authority or partially in the authority. or at least the majority of the jurisdictions in the case of cities outside of the metro area. Inside the metro area, we have to get the agreement of the transit districts, the port, metro, the JPAC, so both the MPO and the Metropolitan Service District, the cities with the, two of the largest cities with, within each county, and one additional city that's chosen by the remaining cities. So there's a fairly extensive involvement process in terms of putting together an intergovernmental agreement both inside and outside of the metropolitan area. Secondly, before this entity could impose any fee or tax or raise any money of any kind, it would have to go to a public vote and ask that question of the public. So it has to go on the ballot. Voters have to approve it. Thirdly, the project that this entity could fund would have to be on the financially constrained transportation plan or the equivalent if it's outside of a metropolitan area. So these have to be projects that are on a plan. They're not projects that are just taken off of, you know, out of thin air. Thirdly, the projects, before they're constructed, have to be in compliance with all applicable state, federal, and local laws. So we can't use this authority to go around existing land use or transportation law. And finally, where any project that this entity might pursue would impact another jurisdiction, a city or a county or ODOT, we have to get their agreement before the project is undertaken. So we don't affect other jurisdictions adversely or at all until they give us the okay to do that. As I said, there are a number of changes from bond council, but they mainly conform language. The one area where there is a substantive change is on the issue of language relating to conforming the project to state, federal, and local law.
Why don't you make, where are you exactly on that?
On the A15 on page 5, B there, large B, says the transportation project or program complies with federal statute and regulations, state laws, and rules and regional and local regulations, ordinances, and comprehensive plans, including those related to the environment, air quality, transportation, and land use. The issue that our bond council raised here is that very often, particularly with large projects, you can't show that you have complied with all of those things before you're actually in the process of doing the project. Let me just give you an example from my background with the light rail project. We do final engineering on the project sometimes contemporaneous with actually doing construction. So we finished final engineering, we begin construction on the first mile of the project, but on the third and fourth mile of the project we're still doing engineering. And we haven't received every approval, like every building permit that we need for the project before it's finalized. There are times when in the course of construction we find things that we didn't know were there. We find a wetland, we find an underground stream, we find underground storage tanks that we didn't know were there. So we have to go to the jurisdiction and ask for changes in our building permits. Sometimes we have to go to federal agencies and ask for changes in a 404 permit for wetlands. So what the bond council suggested is that instead of saying it complies before the project is funded, the entity agrees that it will comply with all state, local, and federal law, so that we will do will ensure that the project complies, but it doesn't have to show that even before you've gone into the construction process. So that would be the one substantive change, I guess, that would be in the amendments that are being that are down at LC now.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Bernie? Yeah. Senator Carter.
I've got the A and Gross version of this. When on page 1, subsection 7, why did you find it necessary to do basically what I'm thinking is a new organization, Metropolitan Planning Organization. Aren't there rules in place where local jurisdictions can appoint their own planning people to do this?
Well, they're currently under the ORS 190 is authority for jurisdictions to enter into intergovernmental agreements. They have some pretty significant limitations on them in terms of the tools that they can use to raise revenue and the kind of bonding revenue or general obligation bonds that they can issue. So this authority would allow more flexibility in terms of the kinds of tools that you can use and the kind of borrowing that you can do against a revenue stream that has been authorized by the voters.
What kind of work is going to be in place that will allow you to bring more groups who disagree with this strategy on board?
Senator Duncan, Senator Carter, there's a couple of stages along the way. One is that the bill requires a public hearing before the intergovernmental agreement to form the entity is enacted or is executed. So that would be one point. Let me just speak to the metro area, since that's the one I'm familiar with. The Metro Council and JPAC would both have to agree, so there would be input during the JPAC process and during the process of passing a resolution at Metro. Same with TriMet. TriMet would have to enter into the IGA. We would have to have an ordinance from our board, so you'd have public input there. The port, all three counties, the largest cities, the two largest cities in each county, and then one additional city that would be chosen. So they would all have public processes as they go into the IGA. And so there really would be quite a few places where public input could be forwarded.
Questions from Ms. Wadley? Okay. Bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. Just like to get on the record that we are in support of House Bill 3408. And the amendments that you see in the dash 15 amendments. We have not had an opportunity to review the additional amendments in any detail, but in discussion with Mr. Bottomley and Mr. Mulvihill, I feel that they are appropriate, and I believe that we would be supportive of those as well. Mr. Mulvihill, who was unable to be here today, has spent considerable time on behalf of Washington County and the counties of the state in putting this legislation together, kind of shepherding the amendments and getting the bill before you today. And we would encourage your support of the amendments and the bill and would encourage you to pass it to the Senate for its approval.
Mr. Donnell, a question. Are all your counties, do you think, in agreement with this?
Mr. Chair, yes. This is something that we have discussed before our legislative committee. I cannot say that all 36 counties have endorsed this. This concept has been reviewed by our legislative committee in another bill, Senate Bill 933, and we support the concept of granting counties and cities and other transportation entities additional tools to deal with the transportation funding needs that face the state of Oregon. I would suggest that this is a 21st century solution to the 21st century problem that we're going to be faced with in trying to deal with the transportation funding needs of Oregon.
Okay. I just maybe you get a chance to talk to Clackamas County representative too to be sure where they are on that particular bill.
Very good.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like clarification. You said that you were in agreement with all the amendments. I have before me dash 10.
Let me clarify 15, that. With the dash 15 amendments, okay. -A15 amendments. As I indicated, we have discussed the additional amendments that are being made to the -A15 amendments that Mr. Bottomley talked about regarding bond council's suggested changes.
Which may
clarification,
be,
yes, the dash.
Which may be an A7, dash 17?
16.
Well, the 16, I think, is being set aside, isn't it? My understanding, the 16 is being revised.
I've lost track of it.
It'll be an 18.
I think we could.
I've not seen 18 yet.
Mr. Chair, I think we could even be up to the 19, so.
Well, it's somewhere up in there, in 18, 19, someplace.
We will be around for the work session on this, Mr. Chair, and be happy to respond at that time.
Because we need all the help we can get.
Mr. Chair, if
yes.
I can follow up.
Yes.
My reason for asking that question, that I would be very interested if these other amendments, and I guess your answer tomorrow would be fine, but if these other amendments were added on to the A15s or the base with the A15s or an A19s, that you would still want the bill with some of these other amendments. I think that's critical because the way I perceive this is that you folks have started with a good bill, and there's a lot of people trying to jump on now, and I do not want to see a good bill poisoned. So I really want to be very clear whether you support, which amendments you support.
Very good. I would, Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, I would be very happy to comment on this at the work session, because there are other amendments that we have talked about besides the A15 and bond council suggested changes. So I think when we have all of the amendments before us, we would be more than happy to indicate to you which ones we support and which ones we feel would be encumbrance to the bill.
We appreciate that. Any other questions for Mr. Pinhollow? Okay. And
thank you.
And you are aware that if this were a different time, we wouldn't be operating this way.
Very certain after. Okay. Having been around here for a couple of years, I realize that.
Andrea.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Andrea Fogg with the League of Oregon Cities. Cities also support the -15 amendments and the concept of regional transportation authorities. These are very important because they not only add a tool for local governments to raise much-needed transportation revenue, but they allow that tool on a regional basis. And as you know, regions all have different ways of doing things, and so it really allows them to find a solution that fits for their local communities. So again, the League of Oregon Cities supports the -15 amendments. We do have concerns. We know at least of the -16 amendments and potentially others that we would not support. And if in fact they became a part of this bill, we would not be able to support the bill. It's not something that we don't want to happen because we very much support the concept of regional transportation authorities.
A question. Now, you just heard the discussion about the revision. We're not sure what it's going to be. Dash sentence.
The bonding issues,
part,
Mr.
You
Chair.
You could support that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We won't hold you until you've seen the full amendment. Questions, Brandon? Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Bill Wagner, are you addressing the main bill, right? Okay.
Chair, if I may say, I indicated to Mr. Wagner that I would join him here at the table.
Oh, okay.
As well.
Sure.
Bill Wagner is the director of the Cascade West Council of Governments, which represents Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties, and is here on behalf of those counties.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm actually here to bring the written testimony of Commissioner Benton County Commissioner Madrell, who regrets that she can't be here, but she's also the chair of our Area Commission on Transportation, and today we have a long-standing engagement with two Oregon Transportation Commissioners and the new director of Oregon Transportation Department, so she had to be back in Benton County.
If you could just summarize that for us,
yeah,
and then present that to them, and we'll get copies of her testimony rather than read the testimony. We'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, I will. She makes 6 points. The points are, and I'll just go through those quickly, she appreciates the local control here. that this is a mechanism that gives cities, counties, port districts, and others the ability to decide on an appropriate financing mechanism and then present that to the public. She also feels that the way the bill is crafted, it's equally applicable to urban areas as well as our non-urban areas and urbanizing areas. She feels that there is a great deal of flexibility provided to municipalities within a region to also create subregions, and this is very important in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties, where we might have a completely different transportation issue in the east side of the valley than we would have on the coast. So this allows, without forming a new structure, to address those specific issues. She also appreciates the variety of financing tools that this makes available. Certainly for a particular project on the coast, they told me over and over again they would like one financing mechanism that works well there versus something else that would be applicable to Benton and Lynn counties working together on. Important, there is nothing in this legislation that gives the authority planning capacity. This is simply a financing mechanism once a project has arisen out of a good planning project, whether that's city, county, or a state transportation project. And finally, this bill gives recognition to the fact that transportation needs today must be met through partnerships. We are, I'm afraid, finished with the era of one-source financing to make a project go. In our region, the last major projects on state facilities, except for one, have all had either city or county financing along with the state and federal financing to make those projects go, and we can't see that changing. This would allow us to use more appropriate financing mechanisms to partner with the state and cities and counties.
Okay, thank you very much. You know, I believe Mr. Benhaller did introduce you, but why don't you just, for the record, just state again who you were.
My name is Bill Wagner. I'm the Executive Director of Cascades West Council of Government.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Metzger?
Mr. Wagner, regarding the bill as written and even with the amendments, what would be the problem of having the land use and environmental issues addressed prior to going to the voters for the monies rather than perhaps finding out that those issues were developed after the monies had already been approved?
Well, certain issues will already be addressed because these projects are to come out of a thorough planning process. However, once you get to a certain point, there are significant monies that must be spent to do a thorough environmental review and other reviews that should take place before construction begins. I would think that it's prudent to have a tool that can provide those significant monies, but may have a restriction that you can't collect money to actually build the project until those studies, environmental studies and other studies, are complete. I'm sure there must be a way to craft it, either locally or within the statute.
Yes, go ahead.
No,
okay. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Jacob Rostoff and Randy Tucker. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Duncan.
Now, you're here on the bill itself, not any amendments, right?
Well, I'm here on the bill, and I think Randy will speak a bit to the amendments.
The
dash 15.
Right, the dash 15, right. And not the other various issues.
Also, I'm not sure if, I think the sign-up sheet may have made it up to you before Matt Blevins from the Oregon Environmental Council got on it, but we're hoping that he would speak with us on the panel. Thank you, Chair Duncan.
Okay.
I'm Jacob Rostoff. I'm the transportation advocate for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the panel. And I think I'll pass my testimony up at this point. I want to first
I would hope that you just summarize your testimony rather than reading your testimony.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we'll all have copies.
Yes. I want to start out giving a short overview of our position on the bill. We support the concept of increased transportation funding and increased and new funding mechanisms for all transportation modes, as long as the funding is spent equitably across modes and creates a balanced transportation system. We also feel strongly that new funding must support existing priorities. It must not undermine them. So it should fund projects and programs that have already been planned, reviewed by the public, and agreed to by regulatory agencies. And the story that we tell about this bill and this concept generally is that, let's say we're going on a vacation together and a nice man has offered to pay for the cost of the gas on the trip. We think that's great, but we don't want the nice man to tell us when we're leaving, how we're going to get there, and where we're going. So we want a regional transportation authority to be limited to funding projects that are already planned and have already been through a rigorous public planning process, not to place projects on the ballot in front of voters that could be rejected later due to unacceptable impacts to land, the transportation system, or the environment. So I want to be very clear about that. I think Randy will talk later about the difference between the A. N. Gross bill that passed with such great support out of House Transportation and on the floor of the House and the amendments that are coming before you as a committee. I also want to point out that we've worked very hard with a very broad coalition of stakeholders to ensure that this bill provides new opportunities to fund existing priorities. And we worked hard to include protections to make sure that the projects funded under the bill advance our environmental and community goals. Before the A. N. Gross amendments and the A. N. Gross version of the bill, we raised some concerns that this would allow voters, or the Regional Transportation Authority, to put projects on the ballot that don't comply with existing land use, transportation, and environmental laws. With the A. N. Gross version, we feel that we can be neutral on this bill because it requires that before projects go on the ballot. So just to summarize, we want to make sure that projects that go before the voters are part of a financially constrained regional transportation plan.
The projects in a financially constrained regional transportation plan, which metropolitan regions must have by federal law, those projects are projects that a region can reasonably expect to find funding for in the upcoming years. But also, those projects must comply with federal environmental quality standards. So again, we want to see the RTA put financially constrained projects on the ballot.
Jacob, my question to you would be, are you for 3408, the A. N. Gross version, or not?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. For the A. N. Gross version?
A. N. Gross version, yes.
No, the A. N. Gross version, but not the A. N. Gross with the dash 15s.
I have not been able to obtain a copy of the A. N. Gross with the dash. I have a copy of the dash 15s, not the A. N. Gross, so I can't speak to that. The dash 15s that I've seen, I think we have some significant concerns about it. I think Randy can talk about that.
Randy will talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I just finish up really quickly?
Sure.
Thank you. So in addition to this issue of financial constraint, we want to make sure that land use, transportation, and environmental requirements are met before being presented to the voters, and I think the testimony of Bill Wagner that you just heard speaks to that point, that in fact it is possible to do a substantial amount of compliance work, environmental, land use, transportation compliance, before putting projects out to the vote. We want that to happen because we don't want voters to be asked to pay taxes or other fees and have their expectations raised if down the line the project is going to fail because it has insurmountable problems.
Sure.
So I want to be very clear about that. I think that's good government. I think that's good policymaking, and I think it's responsible to do as much upfront work as possible and identify issues before asking voters to fund projects.
Okay. Sir, just like maybe I should make it clear. When I was referring to a moment ago, I was referring to the hand engrossed version, which includes the dash 15 amendments.
Okay.
Not some additional amendments that are
right. We haven't seen the hand engrossed version, I think, that you're looking at, but we have questions about the dash 15 amendment.
Okay. Senator Duncan, if I may, Randy Tucker, 1000 Friends of Oregon. We do have the dash 15 amendment here, and if you're speaking of something that is substantively identical but just hand engrossed, then we've seen that.
Senator Carter.
Jacob, I was just looking at some of the points that you were making. Your thing is that even if a local group is given this authority, whatever projects they carry through a process, those are the ones that you want to have been, to have had the public scrutiny in terms of, again, environmental standards, but also community-based groups or all the people. Okay, absolutely. And we,
Senator Burdick, are you being called out? No, I just want to accommodate you, whichever way is going to be helpful. Okay.
Senator Carter, Chair Duncan, Senator Carter, if I may, I think that the answer to that question lies in requiring that work to be done up front.
Mm-hmm.
That's when community groups and multiple stakeholders have an opportunity to air their difficulties with the project and differently
follow. So do the -15s do that at this point?
I don't believe they do.
Gotcha. Okay, that's my question.
Okay. Randy.
Should I go to the details there? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Randy Tucker again, 1000 Friends of Oregon. Let me point you to the specific area of the AIM growth and the -15s where this discrepancy occurs. If you're looking at, if you have a hand in growth version of the AIM in growth, you know, combined with the -15, on page 3 of the printed AIM growth bill, lines 20 to 23, that is deleted, and it's replaced with something that I have on the -15 amendment. Page 2, if you've got it written in, basically here's the bottom line. In the printed bill, it says, a regional transportation authority may, by board resolution or order, refer to electors residing in the district or in a sub-district a revenue-raising measure that complies with Section 4, Sub 3 of this 2001 Act, et cetera, okay? And 4, Sub 3 of the Act, if you turn the page, is the material that Jacob has just been discussing, which is compliance, it's in a financially constrained plan and it complies with applicable laws. The amended version, the -15s, only requires compliance with Section 5 of the 2001 Act, which does not address those concerns. And so neither the requirement that a project be on a financially constrained list or that it comply with applicable laws is accommodated prior to going out to the ballot in the amended bill. Now, the reason I'm up here, instead of just letting Jacob say this, is that I had a conversation a couple days ago with Dennis Mulvihill, and my understanding, but we need to see this obviously in the amendments, is that at least part of this will be put back in some future version of this bill. The financially constrained element of it, and then there are some specific language tweaks that we discussed. So that is critical to us, that projects be on a financially constrained list or the equivalent in areas that do not have a regional transportation plan prior to going out to the ballot. And so, as I said, that is not encompassed in the -15 amendment. And then also important to us is that the projects comply with the applicable land use, transportation, and environmental laws prior to going out to the vote.
And to be clear, about Senator Carter's question earlier, reintroducing financial constraint into the -16s or the -whatever the next round of amendments to the bill might be called, the -99s or the -2007s, it does not require projects before they go on the ballot to provide stakeholder input of the nature that Senator Carter was questioning. So I want to be very clear about that.
As I recall the conversation you and I had, a key element is you want to be sure the people meeting land use laws.
That's correct.
And I guess one of the things that we said we try to do is get that on the record, and also hit the Department of Transportation once again on the record that's their intent, too. And as I understand it, that is their intent, but I think you might
Think it on the record, too. Mr. Chair, we did have that conversation in some depth with respect to the transportation package that got signed by the governor today. And we may have had, we did discuss it with respect to this as well. There are these two elements that we think are critical to happen before things go out to the ballot. One is that the projects that are going to the ballot are on the financially constrained list or, you know, in areas that do not have a regional transportation plan, local areas that are not in an MPO. Jacob, can you
acknowledge comprehensive plan?
Right.
Acknowledge transportation system.
In other words, they've gone through a process of prioritization, selection, vetting, approval, et cetera. through the normal planning process before we go out and ask people to cough up some bucks to pay for them. And then the other element is compliance with applicable environmental land use and conservation regulations. And those are both in the A and growth bill. They're both in the dash 15 amendment, but only after the project goes out to a vote and before it's funded. And so that's the issue, is when you have to make sure that those are taken care of.
Question, yes.
Yeah, Randy. As you described it, the bill has it in the A and growth version prior to letting it to the voters. And this one reverses that process, or at least parts of that process.
Fix it later.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess my question is, the A and growth version, Representative Starr's bill that passed the House here, were you supportive of that bill as it passed the House of Representatives? I want to get that on the record.
Technically, we put a letter out saying that we had moved from strong concern to neutrality and that we were continuing to work on the bill because the bill was a work in progress at that time. So we did not lobby in favor of the bill, but we had worked substantially on the bill to that point, and we were neutral and continuing to be engaged positively on the bill. And as we've said on the record here today and continue to say, we're supportive of this concept, and we're just trying to make sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
But you're saying as you see the dash 15s, you're moving back the other way.
That's right. The dash 15s lose some critical elements that we worked on in the House.
Okay. At some point, I'd like to hear some more doubt on that. Okay.
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I'll just be brief. Again, for the record, the Oregon Environmental Council does support new innovative mechanisms for funding transportation options here in the state, and we think that it's good that the committee and the body is looking at new and different ways to do that. But that said, we still do have concerns in the direction that we're heading with this bill. And I think, briefly, they're basically reflect what South and Friends testified to. But again, for the record, we really feel like if we're going to put projects out for bonding in this way, they need to make sure they comply with environmental land use and other transportation regulations that we already have on the books. They make sense, they're good policy, and they should go forward on that. Putting something like this out where we're sending out projects for funding does not seem to us to be fiscally responsible or to continue to promote good government or good public policy, and in fact could eat away at the public's faith in our ability to continue to give them good projects to fund. So we would encourage you guys to really look at these amendments and keep us going in the direction that the original bill was headed when it came out of the House.
Any questions for Matt or Jacob or Randy before?
Mr. Chair, can I just reiterate one thing very briefly? That some of these concerns that I've discussed, my understanding is that at least partially they will be addressed in the next round of amendments, and so we need to make sure that we take a look at that and see where we are. Okay, we're waiting.
An amendment that's going to address those concerns. Okay, thank you folks very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Betsy Earls, Joe Gilliam, and Bill, I think you were going to, where are you? Come on up at the same time. And as I understand it, you do have, I keep telling people not to discuss it, but I think that the dash 20s do fit in with what we're talking about, don't they?
Mr. Chairman, for your record, Bill Linden representing 7-Eleven, Inc. The dash 20 amendments are the amendments we wish to discuss with you today. And I apologize for just now getting them to you. We literally got them within the last 15 minutes.
I was just thinking, is there anyone else out there who wanted to testify on 3408 without the amendments or anything at this point? Okay, so we're now moving to the amendments part of it, and someone might alert Senator Burdick that we're getting close to her. Okay, go ahead, Phil.
Thank you. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, is walk you briefly through the dash 20 amendments. These are designed to address a revenue-raising technique called a street tax or street fee. There is a street fee ordinance pending in the city of Portland. It actually was going to have been acted on this week by the council. It's been postponed to probably next week for action. There are also five other jurisdictions, it's my understanding, in the state that have already imposed the street tax or street fee. This tax or fee is based usually on a formula that calculates the numbers of trips that are generated from a particular type of property. So, for example, from a residence, there would be a formula result that showed X number of trips. From a supermarket, it would obviously be a larger number of trips. It then also may be calculated based on square footage of certain properties. So, for example, the square footage of a supermarket or a office building could also be calculated into a formula establishing this tax or fee. My point is this is a fairly complex method of assessing a tax or fee on residences and businesses, and it also can result in fairly significant taxes and fees being paid. What the Dash 20 amendments do is provide that any local government that has adopted such a tax or fee through ordinance prior to July 15, 2001, those would remain effective. They would not be preempted or otherwise affected, but they wouldn't be able to increase those existing street taxes or fees until we've gone through a study process. And you'll see that Section 8 of the amendments provides for a three-member House, three-member Senate study group on this particular issue in the coming interim. The Dash 20 amendments would also prevent any other jurisdictions who hadn't already enacted this type of street tax or fee by July 15, 2001, from enacting a street tax or fee prior to January 2, 2004, when those prohibitions are lifted under Section 7A of the amendments. The task force would work during the interim, and its specific charge would be to investigate the ramifications of local taxes or fees for transportation funding that are based on trip generation formulas. Obviously, one of the questions there, you know, will be in a broader context of transportation funding generally and how that can best be accomplished. So what we're trying to do here is set in place a study process where all the interested parties can have a chance to work with this interim task force on this particular issue and hold in place the status quo in the sense that jurisdictions that have enacted these types of taxes and fees before July 15th, and that will include the City of Portland, those are not impacted.
No new taxes or fees from other jurisdictions who haven't acted by then, and the existing taxes or fees in place cannot be increased prior to the repeal date of January 2, 2004. You should also note that Section 8 imposes a penalty if a jurisdiction were to impose or establish a tax or fee after July 15th, but before the effective date of this bill. In other words, try to come in with this sort of ordinance in the interim between the July 15th trigger date and the effective date, which will be 91 days after signee die, they would be required to refund those taxes collected from that fee. So we want to hold the status quo, although the City of Portland will not be affected when they act next week, and provide a forum where this can be fully discussed by all the interested parties. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
When I finish the three of them, they won't take questions, all right? Or do you have somebody in question right now? Okay, Betsy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. I think probably all of you know or remember that AOI has for a very long time pursued a statewide solution to Oregon's transportation funding problems. This session, I think, thanks to Representative Starr, we've been quite a bit more successful than we were last session. That wasn't very successful at all. And because of what happened last session, I think that we understand exactly how cities and counties are getting to where they are on needing or feeling that they need to raise additional revenues for their own streets. By the same token, we have a number of members who are very concerned about using this particular method to assess fees, and therefore we're supporting the Dash 20s because we like to, without getting in the way of anything that cities have already done, we would like to take a little bit of time and look at exactly what these kind of sort of patchwork fixes are doing to the state as a whole and to the long-term funding situation of the state transportation system.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Joe Gilliam representing the Oregon Grocery Industry Association. I would echo Betsy's comments. We feel that the way this thing is going, how it's developing, is really uncharted ground. It's truly not in the spirit of the bill, of the original bill. You're looking at the core of the bill in putting taxes and fees out to a vote, looking at regional type of taxation plans in order to repair roads and streets and all that. And our industry is for repairing a lot of these streets and doing our share to repair those costs because we rely on the streets to bring our trucks into our stores and to stock our shelves. So it's a very important system to us. But as we started to look at these street fees and using trips generated and square footage, there's a lot of inequities that have come about. We don't think that are that really stand true to trying to get everybody to pay their fair share. I'll give you an example. In the end ordinance that they're looking at accepting next week, and under this bill they will get this, but we want to kind of put a freeze on it and say let's really look at these. But a restaurant would pay 0.6 cents per trip at their maximum estimated trips coming in and out of the small restaurant, big restaurant, doesn't matter. All the restaurants are being treated the same. Grocery store, if that BW bug leaves the restaurant and crosses the street and drives into the Safeway lot, we get to pay 11.5 cents for that Volkswagen to come across the street. Same road damage, nothing changes. And if they go down to their office building and they're in a high-rise, that high-rise owner gets to pay $1.81 per trip. Now, when you break it down, the idea is to try to find some way that when people use the roads, they're paying their fair share. If they're doing damage, if it's a heavier truck, if it's a lighter vehicle, whatever. But these types of systems aren't really getting to that, and people are getting so desperate to start doing a patchwork type of system to get their streets filled, all of a sudden you're not going to be able to get a statewide or a region-wide. You could pass this bill with a regional taxing authority, and no one's going to agree because a city inside it already has their taxes. So why get taxed twice? So while it doesn't put the skids on their plan, it just says you get your plan now, but before you increase it, before you go any further, let's take a real hard look at these trip generation type plans and see if they're really fair. And we think that's a pretty fair place to be in this.
Joe, I have a quick question. One could argue your case, you know, about the cost per trip and so forth. Why is that of concern to the legislative body? It sounds to me like it's a local control kind of an issue. Are you saying you don't trust your local people, so you have a better shot here, or what?
Mr. Chair, I don't think that's
the
what I'm
to that.
I'm not quite trying to say that. in fear of ruining this kumbaya session. No. Mr. Chair, in all seriousness, I don't think it's that we don't trust them. I think they're in a position that everybody's trying to scramble to try to repair the roads and do what they can in their jurisdiction. I think without this amendment to the bill, you're going to get a patchwork that you will not ever be able to repair, and you're going to put certain jurisdictions, such as Senator Carter is going to be down here now returning with a new tax on her constituents saying, now we need a statewide tax to solve the road problem. And her constituents are going to say, we're already getting taxed on our water bill for our streets. What do I need another tax for? My streets are taken care of. So Portland's out. People don't like it. Well, what about the people in Eugene? What about the people in Bend? And all of a sudden, you just start breaking it down. And all we're saying with this amendment is not that you can't use these methods, but the legislature should look into these methods, do a study, come back with the best answer on how to use these methods that's fair across the board. Otherwise, we'll never get a statewide plan.
You've been doing this for a while, haven't you, Joe?
He's good. Other questions? Senator Munsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, for the record, I assume that the Dash 20s replace the Dash 16s. Is that right? And secondly, how many cities in the state of Oregon are now using this type of taxation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Messerly, it's my understanding there are six cities, and Portland will be the seventh.
Okay.
The others are smaller cities, I think. One I recall, I think, is the city of Talent, I believe. Portland will be far and away the largest jurisdiction.
That wasn't a trick question, and I apologize for not asking the League of Oregon Cities. I had a documentation earlier today that there are 10, and do you know how long some of those cities have been taxing this way?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Messerly, I don't personally. I know that this issue really came up on our client's concern list with the City of Portland ordinance.
I haven't had testimony of this, but I think maybe one of them is as long as 10 years. But let me just read into the record who I have here that have been on. Ashland, Eagle Point, LeGrand, Medford, Phoenix, Tualatin, Medford, Portland, Tigard, and Wilsonville. So I guess my concern and what I'd like clarified for the record, maybe you've already answered that, but this has been going on for some time. We've got several cities. Why has this become critical at this point?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Messerly, I'll take a shot at that. I think the City of Portland's proposed ordinance has sort of caught the attention of a whole variety of interested parties who are interested both in taxation methods and levels and in transportation issues generally in the state. And I agree with what Mr. Gilliam earlier said. I think that what you're going to have someday is a patchwork financing system for transportation infrastructure, and I'm not sure that's where the best way on a statewide basis to do what we need to do with that infrastructure. The intent of the study is to let you and your colleagues make a judgment about that. That you may decide this is the best way to do it, or this is a part of a good way to do it, or you may decide that this is in fact going to reduce the enthusiasm for local voters who have this sort of financing for their transportation needs to support more statewide or regional approaches. Again, we want an open and serious study of it, and you know, it could be that this will be determined to be an integral piece of some future plan for transportation funding, or again, it could be that this would harm the greater good.
Mr. Chair, could I follow up?
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to have a task force or someone do the study, but why do we need the moratorium and the cap on the rate at this point?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Messerly, I would argue that there are enough concerns, at least on our end of the table, about the wisdom of doing this in the long run in terms of the transportation needs of the state of Oregon, that we should hold the status quo while, again, you and your colleagues study the issue and make a judgment about where this fits into the bigger picture. So I think we will see, without some sort of moratorium, I think we will see a proliferation of these street fees and taxes because, you know, I'll be the first to admit, local government has great transportation needs, and they really don't have anywhere to go to address those needs. If they find a place to go, like a local street fee or tax, we'll see more and more of these.
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, the only thing I would add to that is I think what the task force would want to do is look also at the equities. Who's paying and how much, and what are the differences, and what might be a statewide standard not to exceed, give them flexibility within the cities. But what we're seeing is, you know, we talk about there's these type of taxes in Ashland, in Tualatin, in Wilsonville, in Portland, but they're not on a standard formula without any balance to them. So while a single residence gets $1.85 in the city of Portland, a local grocery store pays $500 a month. It seems to be out of whack. And when you go down with their estimates and just say, per trip, why is a restaurant paying 6 cents? We're paying 11 cents. And maybe it's a better way to say, okay, here's the parameters which you follow if you decide to do a street tax. Not saying you have to ban them, just saying there might be a better statewide policy that achieves the goal of getting it done across the state rather than just jurisdiction by jurisdiction. I just think it would be real important for you to to comment on that.
Other questions, Senator Messerly?
Senator, that's correct. Yeah, I would just, I think, go on the same theme of Senator Messerly and Senator Duncan. I guess the only concern I would have about that, Joe, is
is without discussing the merits of the issues that you brought up, which I, you know, may even concur with you on some of those, the fact of the matter is by taking that tool away, that still is a public process. I mean, just like the legislature is, whatever that municipality is. I know you go to the city of Sandy where the voters turned out a 1 cent gas tax for local streets. So, I mean, it was quite a public process. But having that tool available for the public process for the citizens of that municipality to discuss the wisdom or lack thereof of one of those seems to be at this point, and I think as Senator Mesley pointed out, I would certainly agree with the idea of looking at that issue, but to take that tool away when it is a public process tool in those municipalities, whether it's in Talent or the city of Portland, just seems like a rather dramatic step at this point. I was just curious to your action as to, you know, why do we really need to take away that tool at this point? Because those merits can be discussed on a different level, public level.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I think, you know, in the example, the Portland example, this was budgeted, put into the budget at a $60 million figure before it was even brought to the city council and discussed in an open forum. So that's an example of getting the cart ahead of the horse in this case. And I'm just saying, before these spread all over the place, I think there might be real merit to you folks saying, street fees are fine, you know, we're not going to prohibit them or preempt them or anything else, but here are probably the guidelines or at least some broad boundaries to stay within. We probably ought to do it sooner than later as the needs increase. So that's just, we just think it's time for you to comment on it, and then we'll go forth after what, you know, whatever you guys come up with. More open to that one.
I have one question for you. I can't, I thought I was just checking. Did this issue come up in any other bill? Has this been discussed in the body thus far?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe it has. This is something that's just come to the forefront with the Portland measure coming up, and it had a June deadline.
Okay,
so
thank you folks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay. Did Senator Burdick get back yet? Susan Snyder and B.J. Smith, did you have some comments?
Yeah.
Or anybody else you'd like to have join you? As long as they're all brief. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
BJ, do you want to start?
Certainly, Senator. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm BJ Smith. I'm the Public and Government Relations Director for Clackamas County. First, I would like to express our sentiments are in favor of the bill as originally presented, along with the bond council amendment. We do think that there's great value, I think, in having another tool for transportation. Although I was somewhat stunned this afternoon to learn about the preemption options that are being put on the table before the committee, those that would affect local ability to establish taxes, I would like to tell you, or fees for transportation. I would like to tell you a couple of things about what's going on in Clackamas County. First, the first and most important thing is there was a statement, I think, by my colleagues a few minutes ago about holding the status quo. The one thing that I would like to remark is that there are certain parts of this state, Clackamas County is a fine example, where there is tremendous growth pressure on us. There is a great responsibility to accommodate the growth in the metropolitan area, and within the next 2 years, we are looking at decisions that might change the urban growth boundary outside of Portland and perhaps bring more land for development into Clackamas County. With that, we cannot hold back the status quo in terms of looking at transportation options. We have, for the last 2 years, been involved in a very serious process of bringing our citizens together. Hundreds of citizens in Clackamas County have talked about what it takes to develop a complete community. And in their words, a complete community is the type of community that with growth they still want to be a part of, and that they are enabled to bring that community up to the quality of life that they are interested in. The second aspect of what we have been involved in for 2 years is that we have been working very seriously through a concurrency task force that has been composed of 55 members. They are local government officials representing cities, counties, special districts, the business sector. The North Clackamas Chamber of Commerce has represented the business sector broadly, and this entire group has looked at transportation for the burgeoning growth development areas of Clackamas County. This group has been chaired, actually, by an official of the Home Builders Association. So it has been both a business and community effort to try to come up with options. That group has just completed its effort and turned over its report to the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners. The presentation will be made by the Home Builders Association of Metropolitan Portland just next week. And one of the recommendations of that group is to very seriously look at a utility fee as a source of revenue to try to help us accommodate the growth that we're experiencing. There has been a tremendous amount of publicity of both the concurrency task force work and the complete communities work in Clackamas County, and tremendous options and opportunities for people to become involved. We are looking in areas of our county where Clackamas County is a big county. We get about $64 million a year in county gas tax, but in one small area of North Clackamas County near Happy Valley, we are looking over a 20-year period at having to spend $193 million to bring our transportation system up to par to handle the growth. Of that, there is certainly a great effort to increase, and this is always tough, but it's an effort to increase business development charges due to that rapid growth. But every time you establish an increase in growth in business development charge to pay for the effects of growth, there is a responsibility on the current residents to also pay their share of, for the cost of the roads that are wearing out. So systems development charges are not a complete answer, even in high growth communities. You need other local sources of funding. We're a county that has been unsuccessful at the polls with respect to the local gas tax and a vehicle registration fee. It is clear to me that we have to look at other efforts, and we have done everything I think that is possible in the last 2 years to involve our community and to look at that problem in transportation and come up with solutions. So we are definitely in a very difficult situation. We cannot hold the status quo, and I believe our commission would like the full option and opportunity to go through its public process to determine whether or not this is a viable opportunity and option for them for transportation.
Yeah, you are opposed to
I am opposed to the preemption amendment.
Right. By the way, just and I know you travel, so I want to give you a good time. Senator Kleiner and I both have ways and means at 5:30, so we are getting close. So I'm going to let you comment, and if you have anything to add to, okay, or you nod your head, but I'll let you, would you identify yourself?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and other senators. Pleased to be here. My name is Steve Wheeler, city manager, city of Tualatin, and I'm kind of on the local trenches of this issue. So the brief title of my talk is Trust Your Local Process, and we need this tool. And I'll give you a couple minutes of as to why. And I'm speaking specifically in opposition to the preemption section of this bill. We have had a road utility fee, or street user fee, as you call it, in Tualatin for over 10 years, since 1990. This is not a new thing for us. This fee was worked out with extensive public process. And it was worked out locally. There were thousands of informational brochures mailed at that time. There were three separate public forums at such venues as the Chamber of Commerce. There were four articles in the Oregonian, and there were six articles in the Tualatin Times newspaper. There was a lot of public, a chance for public input on this. And of course, in the end, there was adoption at a publicly noticed and attended city council meeting. The revenue generated from this is dedicated solely to our road utility fund. It isn't commingled so it can pay for police, it can't pay for libraries or anything like that. 6/7 of it is dedicated to a pavement maintenance program that we have rigorously followed and have used extensively to improve our local streets. The other 1/7 goes to street lighting costs, street lights that keep us safe at night. I've been city manager for about 5.5 years in Tualatin, and I can honestly say I do not recall one single complaint about this street in that time. And believe me, I've heard complaints about plenty of other things and know how to find me. The basis for the fee is 9 separate trip generation categories, and they range at the low end from a
multifamily residential to at the high end a large commercial complex. And I'll tell you a little bit about why I think that's fair. On the high end would be a commercial complex such as Fred Meyer. And we have a Fred Meyer in Tualatin. I like it. I've actually shopped there many times. But the Fred Meyer is a huge regional draw. It draws not only Tualatin residents, but it draws people from Wilsonville, Lake Oswego, Sherwood, Tigard, cities that surround us. These people are on our streets to get to that that facility. And this fee, which was developed by the Institute of Transportation Engineers, evaluates the trip generation from something like that and then spreads it out accordingly. And if we didn't have a way to capture more money from the Fred Meyers of the world, really we would end up with Tualatin residents subsidizing outside people using those streets. With this tool, without this tool, if we didn't have this, we'd be back in our general fund looking to fund these things. That would have an impact on police and other things that come out of the general fund. The basic fact of the matter is there has not been enough state money generated for local streets and roads. We are on our own. We're expected to generate it ourselves. This is a tool we need, and I would really urge you to give us that tool and keep it healthy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You want to just nod your head? You don't want this. Okay, quickly, because I'm going to have to.
As the city, as the Portland City Council, gone to the people on this issue, number one. If so, what is the read of the people on this issue, number two? Number three, how much does the city need to fill the gap of what they get from the state and from the feds on transportation issues?
Okay, you can get answers.
I get
to her, be helpful. Okay. yes, Susan. No, just go ahead and get that information to her, okay?
Mr. Chair, are we going to have the opportunity to testify on this further, or is this it?
You'll have probably a brief opportunity to testify on it tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. But if you have concerns, be sure to get those to us in the meantime, okay? Yes. Yes.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I would also like an opportunity to comment on this tomorrow. I understand you're on a time crunch here, but I think there were some things that were said in the previous testimony that must be responded to. And also, I think there's a fundamental argument that it's important that you hear.
Well, let me ask this question. Let me just check. Thank you. Stand by. Stand by. I think we will. Senator Carno and I will be gone. Senator Metzger and the rest will stay and get that on the record for you, okay? At this point, I think I will ask Senator Burdick to come forward and get her name on the record, and you can move back, and Senator Metzger, you'll be able to. I'd just like to pursue, and I'll stay for just a minute, and then I'll run for my.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Burdick, and I'm State Senator for District 6. I won't take long. I really appreciate your giving me the chance to testify briefly on the Dash-A-10 Amendment. The Dash-A-10 Amendments may look familiar because this committee dealt with the issue in those amendments, which is pedestrian safety, in the form of Senate Bill 938, which was introduced with bipartisan support in both the House and Senate, passed unanimously through this committee, and passed very heavily in the Senate. And this bill, this amendment incorporates the provisions of Senate Bill 938, and I really appreciate the efforts of Representative Starr to allow this to take place in his bill. It's appropriate that this be added to this particular bill because one of the foremost witnesses who came to testify in favor of the pedestrian safety measure was Lieutenant Patrick Cass of the Hillsborough Police Department, who is a constituent of Representative Starr. Basically, what the amendments do is they clarify existing law to make it very clear to drivers that when they see a pedestrian in a crosswalk, they have to stop and remain stopped until the pedestrian gets safely through the traffic, through the traffic area. My hope would be that this would find its way into the driver's manual to give people a better idea of what their responsibilities are when there's a pedestrian in the crosswalk. This bill and this amendment was introduced in response to traffic fatalities that are way higher than they should be. Any fatality is higher than it should be. And we believe that the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, which requested this measure, believes that this will make an important difference. And again, I want to conclude by saying how much I appreciate the efforts and enthusiasm of this committee, and would hope that this is an amendment that would even there would be an improvement to the underlying bill. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, Senator Messer, Senator Burdick? Senator Burdick, you said this, but I just want to reiterate this. Since this bill will be going back to the House of Representatives for concurrence, to Senator Starr's committee, that you have met with Senator Starr on these amendments, and he Representative Starr, and he is supportive of these amendments.
Yes, Representative Starr is supportive of these amendments. They were in the bill was in his committee, and he was not able to get to it in time before the committee shut down. And it has bipartisan support in the House, so I would expect it to have very good treatment when it gets back for concurrence in the House.
And then a final question for me is, is there any significant changes to these amendments to the original bill that we passed out of this committee in the Senate?
The only change is that there was a drafting oversight in the amendments that we made to the original bill that this committee approved. The term stop and remain stop was used once, and it needed to be used periodically through the bill. That error has been corrected in the Dash 10 amendments. So it's a technical. No substantive changes.
Okay. Yes, Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Burdick, I have a question about the pedestrian being in the lane adjacent to the oncoming car after the pedestrian has passed out of the lane that the driver is in. And that's a change from current law, is my understanding. And what's the kind of reasoning behind needing to remain stopped while the person walks through the additional lane, I guess?
Well, the purpose of this is to make it very clear what the driver's responsibility is. Existing law just says that you have to yield to the pedestrian, and as anyone who's ever watched an intersection can tell, yield means different things to different drivers. What this would do, the purpose of putting that language in about waiting till the pedestrian is one lane away is for these multi-lane highways with crosswalks on them, so that the driver won't have to stay stopped once the pedestrian has really reached a safe point. So if they're right in the lane next door, next to the one where the car is, then it could be frightening or even dangerous to the pedestrian for the car to move through. But once they're one lane over, then the car can go ahead and move through so that they don't unnecessarily delay traffic.
Yes, go ahead.
And the other thing I just wanted the committee to be aware of is that this applies to marked and unmarked crosswalks. And maybe you went through this when you did it originally, but an unmarked crosswalk is at any intersection. That's
correct. An unmarked crosswalk, I believe, is defined as the nearest point to an intersection of two roadways. And my knowledge of the driver's manual is a little foggy, but I do not believe this is a change to existing law. Unmarked crosswalks already require drivers to yield the right-of-way.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Senator Burdick? Thank you, Senator Burdick. Again, we heard this prior in this committee. Is there, just so we have more consistency here, is there anyone else who would like to testify on the Dash A10 amendment to this transportation omnibus bill? Anybody else?
Sure.
Yes,
it might be helpful if we had a police from the ODOT or someone verify what we just heard, that there might have been some question whether it is existing, and also I don't believe we've had a chance to hear a testimony on the adjacent lane issue that we just discussed. I'd like to make sure that the enforcement officers don't have a problem with trying to
me find that. Okay. Doug, you're kind of like looking like you have an answer or able to. No, well, Senator Messonnier has brought up a few things, so why don't we use your expertise?
Thank you. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Doug Tindall, Oregon Department of Transportation. Everything that was stated is correct in law, and I think I just might add for clarity, I believe enforcement testified on this bill earlier that this actually provides clarity about what the driver's responsibilities are. In the current law, it's yield, and I think it's like halfway across the road, and it's not always clear. By providing, as Senator Burdick has explained, by providing that definite one lane across, it does clarify that. And in the original testimony, the enforcement people that I heard were saying that was probably a better thing than what we have now.
Okay, any other questions? Again, anybody want to testify on the Dash A-10 amendments? Okay, thank you, both of you.
Thank you, and again, I really appreciate the interest and attention the committee's given to this. Thank you very much.
Okay, at this point, let's go back to our previous witnesses. Now, you know, we have a little bit of time. Let's hear your comments. I think the purpose of what we're going to do, committee, is in order to expedite our work session tomorrow, is talking with the chair, is to do our testimony, we'll obviously have some comments about these revised amendments we're hearing about, but try to limit that time then tomorrow by hearing the comments today. Yes, Senator Carter.
I'd just like to say I'd rather hear it today because if I'm out early tomorrow, I'm sorry. I'm gone.
You're like, it's me, paycheck, you're gone. So let's proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much, and we will try to be very brief. But I'd like to speak to the A20 amendment. You're all very familiar with the needs for transportation at every level, including the local level. And this bill, it's sort of a classic example of all the things that we've struggled with over many years in terms of funding transportation. On the one hand, the underlying bill, 3408, is an attempt to provide yet another tool for the local area to find a way to fund really serious needs that you're all very well aware of. And this amendment is an amendment to clamp down once those who harsh, but it's a really classic example of this problem. The city of Portland has worked very hard over the last year in hundreds of meetings with neighborhoods, with business groups, three different trips to the Chamber of Commerce and the Association for Portland Progress are okay with this proposal. We've worked very intensely over the last few weeks with the interests who were in the room until just a few minutes ago to address their concerns. I think if you ask them, that most of them, we really have dealt with a lot of their problems. The representative from Safeway indicated that the fee would result in them paying $500 a month. That's not true. We collapsed some of that, and actually their bill will be $197 a month. Now, that's not to say that's not a significant amount of money. It is. But the problems are very significant. I think the problem that we have is you have this amendment because at some point somebody has to come through with a real proposal that asks for real money from businesses and residents in their community. And when not everyone gets exactly what they want, they go looking for a remedy. There are remedies at the local level, as I think at least one senator has pointed out. Working with local government, working with your city council. If you're really upset about it, refer it at the local level. I mean, there are a lot of remedies short of coming to the legislature and saying you've got to do something about those local governments. Because what I was hearing was patchwork means one size fits all. And if there's something I think that everyone in this building understands pretty well, is that doesn't work, especially when it comes to local government and local needs and local communities. I think the other thing I wanted to respond to was that the standard is not something that was just sort of grabbed out of the air. The rates that these things are based on are based on national standards. You heard a little bit about that from the city managers in Tualatin. I have some examples of the estimated fees on specific properties, which I'm happy to present to the committee, and also happy to answer questions. Thank you very much for your attention.
Can I just answer my question in terms of how many times you've done for people and what are you taking?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd just like to add a few brief comments. You've heard this before, but the gap for the 2001-2003 biennium in terms of transportation funding for the city system alone is over $100 million. That is for maintenance and preservation. That includes no modernization. That is a significant, serious gap. With your vote, we have taken a good step in the right direction and passed the transportation funding package this session. But frankly, $400 million, that's going to get some good things done, but that's a drop in the bucket. And it's taken 10 years to get to that point where we've made that investment. There's no doubt that we have to do this on the local level, and we need to maintain this tool for local government. It's absolutely critical. And with that, I take any questions.
What is the gap for programs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I can't give you a specific number. I'm happy to get that for you, and I will get it for all the members of the committee. I heard you articulate that before. This raises about $60 million over 5 years, and I know that it doesn't come close to meeting all our needs. If I could, one more comment. This would be a moratorium of preemption for 3 years while some study was taking place. We think that's absolutely not necessary. It's just another roadblock holding up needed transportation improvement projects in the state. The other thing that I would point out to the committee is it's absolutely unnecessary to have a task force created just to look at this issue. If you all recall, House Bill 3946 is traveling through this process and is on its way, as far as I know, to being passed. That is a task force specifically set up to look at alternative funding mechanisms, and it's got private and public folks represented on that committee. And so there's no need for a separate committee to study just this issue, and in particular, no need to preempt local government in the meantime.
Any other questions for the committee? One thing that Sue pointed out that is true is that we should be getting that bill, that it to look at alternative financing techniques, which deals with this issue as part of that study group, is in that bill. If there's no other questions, thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on this, on the dash 1516 underlying bill part? I don't have anybody else signed up. So if there is anybody, I want to hear from them right now.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just be very brief. For the record, my name is Doug Riggs. I'm here representing Seth Oregon Cities Organization, Redmond and Bend specifically. I would say that we'd be very strongly opposed to anything that would limit or preempt the ability of local communities working in a local public process with their elected officials, their community members, and their business community in exploring a variety of options for transportation improvements and maintenance. So I just wanted to get that on the record. I'll also put on a different hat, which is my Metro hat, and mention that we have been actively involved the last 4 months in the RTA bill. We're strongly supportive of it. We are also supportive of the dash amendments that will come back tomorrow, the dash 21s, I assume. So we would hope that the committee would look favorably on those as well. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Okay, we'll ask the staff. Janet has a letter for the record on this part of the issue.
And the letter is from the City of Eugene, Phil Felt, Legislative Director, opposed to the amendments related to transportation utility fees, and we did pass out a copy.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now the next thing I'd like to do is, I think, Jim, are you the guy for the dash 17 amendments, school bus? Okay, they've come and gone, but I see you're still sitting there. So I'll ask Jim to come up. council representative Starr, I would introduce these. You should have a copy of the Dash 17. You'll remember this issue, we had it a week ago in a conference committee, some of us, does everybody have the Dash 17? This is an issue that Representative Starr and I have been working on, which we've had many times before, and we've narrowed the issue regarding the school buses to simply the school buses and a study of the motor coach issue, not dealing with the other issues that we had controversy of. Senator Messer was in that conference committee, but just trying to deal with this issue, and then you have a comrade who just walked in to help with this. So I'll ask Mr. Green and Mr. Bennett to discuss the Dash A-17 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. The A-17s are brought forward by Representative Starr, and he asked us to be here to comment on them. The issue of school bus safety has been around. It was in this committee when it was the General Government Committee. It was in a conference committee last week, as Senator Metzger indicated. What the Dash A-17s do is to create a study group on the use of motor coaches. We have school districts that use those, and the people that would be on that study group, you can see there, the Department of Education thought that we should add somebody from the National Transportation Safety Board, so that individual has been added. The other thing that the Dash A-17s do is to eliminate pre-77 school buses by the year 2008. That, in talking with our school districts that use these pre-77 school buses, is a timeline that they can live with and meet within the financial requirements of getting rid of those school buses. A new school bus or a used school bus can cost in excess of $70,000, and we're talking some very small school districts that have these pre-77s, where $70,000 can be well in excess of 20% to 30% of their operating budget for the year. So they do need some time to get out there to get rid of those, but we are in support of this amendment. We believe the motor coach issue ought to be looked at, and the phase out of the pre-77s by 2008 will meet the financial needs of our smaller, more rural school districts.
Mr. Bennett?
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I'll just second Mr. Green's comments. We are in support of these amendments.
Okay. Comments from the committee or questions? I think we've had this issue before. I think this is an attempt to try and bring some as much agreement as possible on the safety issues, realizing the issues that we have had with small school districts, some in Senator Messerly and others who are used motor coaches, that we need to maybe step back and take a look and evaluate that as opposed to make a definitive change in that situation. And I think that's a real positive step. And I think the task force you put together, illustrates a lot of the elements of the people who had commented on that issue. Is there anyone else who would like to discuss the A-17 amendments to this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I have no one else set to testify on the bill or the amendments, so hopefully we will get the Dash whatever, 20 whatever, to discuss those, and we'll be able to move on this tomorrow. And with that, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. I think that was what Vern told me.